Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. You know, when the school superintendent is on the show, you get a little nervous. Is everything set up properly? I'm not really sure. It's kind of like, you know, I was in the restaurant business for decades, and it's like, the health inspector's here, the health inspector's here! We always got A grades, or, you know, we never got anything.
Straight A student when you were in school and never did anything that was creating any issues for a teacher.
I was not a straight A student, A's and B's. I did get into the University of Virginia early decision.
There you
so,
go.
So, you know, it was that was never an issue for me. But still, you know, you get a little nervous. Mm-hmm. Superintendent's yeah. around. You gotta.
But when I'm with a model. Student.
Model student. Let me say that
it's all good.
I don't know who in the room is a model student, but it's not me. Mr. Dan Gould, are you a model student?
No, sir.
No, he says no. Mr. Riculo, model student. Let me find that I have that microphone set up properly. Mr. Riculo, model student?
Not in the least.
Not in the least. So, Pam Gould, you must be the model student and remarking about yourself.
Moi? Actually, I was one of those kids that enjoyed school and did pretty well in school. And one of the things that I think that as I've gone through years and years of working with kids in school is a realization that sometimes our most creative and interesting students are not always our model students, and that we should celebrate that our kids are not all just alike and are not all model students all the time.
And that's my theory on things. So that's why I enjoy having you here. I like the divergent thoughts on things. It's not always who's got the AP classes and get, you know, who's going to Princeton and Harvard and needs the GPA a little bit above 4 so that they can live a great life, because it doesn't always work like that, boys and girls. In case you're missing out, we didn't get the official super correct start. This is 94.7 WPVC, Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. This is the Sunday morning wake-up call. Our guest today for the hour, Dr. Pam Moran. She is the superintendent of the Albemarle County Schools. In case you didn't know, let me get this closed because I put this in the 9-point text. There's so much here to read. I had to put it in small, fine font. More than 1,200 teachers, over 13,600 students in 26 schools under Dr. Moran's Albemarle County Schools. On-time graduation rate of 93% is one of the best in the state, and AP scores rank in the top 3% of all school divisions in the U.S. and Canada. Last month, Dr. Moran was named one of the 20 school superintendents across the nation being recognized for innovative leadership by Project Tomorrow, a national nonprofit education organization. Dr. Moran is the Virginia 2016 Superintendent of the Year and one of the 4 finalists for the national designation. And yet, she made time to come on the Sunday morning wake-up call.
Well,
all right, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well, you know, Rick, that when you listen to that list, one of the things that I say to people,
and let's
always,
say I edited that, there was a lot more I could have read.
Is that I am really fortunate that I get to work with a team of educators in a community that I would put up against any in the United States in terms of a commitment to education, and educators that live and breathe their work every day, whether they're administrators, whether they're teachers, bus drivers, custodians, teaching assistants, it doesn't matter. And that's why we're recognized, not because of what I've done as an individual, but what we've done collectively as a team.
I
want to start with that.
Well, that's good. And it's things like that that make people want to continue to work here, is because you don't say, yeah, I'm damn good at my job. It's because you say, I work with great people who help make what I do a lot easier.
It's a WE organization, and I really appreciate the WE that works together so well. And, you know, the fact that we have a couple of parents that have shown up here and community members that have shown up here on a Sunday morning to do this radio show with me, I think really speaks, and including a rising third grader, really speaks to the power of the WE, that our people have come out for our schools.
We will be talking about a couple topics in specific, entrepreneurship and the XQ challenge that goes along with that in a few minutes, along with the bond referendum. Rick Kulo and Jim Tierney and Owen Tierney here with us to talk about those topics, along with Dr. Pam Moran, Albemarle County School Superintendent, on today's Sunday morning wake-up call. Pam, you talked about the WE part of it. You know, I have to ask this question pretty early in the hour. My wife wanted to get a job as an assistant principal at Albemarle County. You didn't have any assistant principals even leave the system. You don't have a lot of turnover.
We do not have, other than retirement. And, of course, you know, being in a university community, and with Rick Kulo here, who works at the university, one of the things that we know is that we have a lot of graduate students that come with spouses, trailing spouses, and after they have finished their time, maybe at the Darden School or the Curry School or the Medical School, Law School, wherever they are, Arts and Sciences, that we may get their trailing spouses for 3 or 4 or 5 years, and then they move on. And so that's one source of our turnover. And then the other one is obviously retirements. But the reality is that we have, I think, a place that teachers in general really love to teach, and administrators like and love their jobs. And so people tend to stick around who are finding education in Albemarle County to be a really great place to work with kids, with parents, and with community members. And we've got great support from our community for our schools. We have just partnerships in every way, both informal and informal. And that kind of support up really causes our educators to feel like that they are a part of the community, not apart from the community. And that sticks.
What is the biggest challenge, not just for the community, the school system? What's the biggest challenge for Dr. Pam Moran in your job on a regular basis?
Well, I would say that one of the things that we try to do is to communicate well, and that's why we're here today, that being able to communicate the work out to a community that has fewer and fewer kids of community members in schools, that we have a population of people that live in Albemarle County who are baby boomers and who have moved on in terms of having children in schools, and yet they have to be a part of the solution to making our community sustain a quality of life, and education is very much a part of that. So I think that one of the things that on a week-by-week basis that we really focus on is how do we really communicate well, not just with our educators and parents inside the community, but with the greater community. So being on a radio station on a Sunday morning with a couple of our community members and parents is a great way to really get out there and say, here's what's going on, here's what the future's looking like, here's what the here and now looks like, and here's how we need your help. And I think that both of the topics that we're putting out today, one looking at how do we educate kids well for both life readiness as adults, but also to be ready to just walk out into their communities today, into their homes today, into their classrooms, and be really great students. That's a really key piece of what we're trying to do, particularly at the high school level. And then I think the other topic, which is how do we really sustain our infrastructure, our facilities in our schools in a way that educates our kids well today in modernized facilities and facilities where they're not overcrowded. But then how do we think about that 5 years out, 10 years out? And so, you know, our whole community has to be a part of that solution, not just the people who have children in schools.
11:09 here on Sunday morning wake-up call. This is WPVC 94.7. Dr. Pam Moran, superintendent of the Albemarle County Schools, here with us today, talking about communicating to the county, not just the parents who, I think in Albemarle County, the parents especially are involved on a regular basis. I have two sisters with kids in the public school system in other locations. The parents in the 21st century, seems like the majority of them are even more involved than they might have been when we went to school. And certainly my parents wanted to know what I'd done during the day and what my grades were. And now there are more things for the kids to do. And so let's talk about one of those that's out there. There's the XQ Project, which is talking about entrepreneurship. So let's do that. Let's bring in Rick Kulo to work and talk with Pam Moran. Rick Kulo, a local businessman, senior entrepreneur at the Darden-Batten Innovation Laboratory at UVA, also known as the UVA iLab. Did I get all that right?
I think you did. Morning, Rick.
That was a lot. You can't possibly put that all on one business card.
And Rick also, I would just note, is a dad of some of our alumni from Western Albemarle.
Yeah, I have two, a son and a daughter that graduated from Western, and I have a rising senior at Albemarle High School in the MESA program. And when you talk about committed parents, my wife, Jane, around the turn of the decade, was president of the Albemarle County Parent Council, so I had a chance to admire Pam's work from a little bit closer perspective.
And who's also been on the program before. You just meet people all over the spider web of folks who have met on Sunday mornings.
That's
here.
Right. And Jane, working at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, another great partner with our school system. So we are very much an interconnected community, and it's hard to sit down in a gathering like this and not find that there's a partnership somewhere, whether it's with the Darden School or whether it's with the Virginia Foundation for Humanities.
So let's talk about entrepreneurship and the XQ project. So, Pam, start about the XQ project.
Okay, we started down the path over a year ago of putting together an application for a major startup project sponsored by Laureen Jobs, Steve Jobs' widow, out of her foundation. And it was to look at how do we reimagine, reinvent, rethink high schools. What's interesting is that corresponded to a similar focus at the level of the state of Virginia on looking at how do high schools need to look different for the kids that we're educating today. So we started putting together a group of students. We had parent input, we've had teacher input, we've had administrative input, a variety of different people working together to conceptualize a proposal. It went in. We've made it through several rounds of, so our pitch went in, we made it through several rounds, and we're now at a place where XQ is about ready to do announcements, but they've embargoed any information about how the different finalists have done until the middle of September. So we still are kind of anxiously awaiting that final announcement. They've made their decisions but have not announced those yet. So
can you tell us what you submitted?
Yeah, our project was really built around how do we have kids more actively engaged in the community, working in situations such as with the Darden School's iLab. In fact, we have some students, I think, Rick, working over there right now with some projects that they're building out. How do we have kids more actively engaged in pursuing learning as they embed that learning in the community? An example would be, I might come to you, Rick, and say, hey, Rick, we've got three students that are really interested in going into radio or knowing more about careers in radio or working as interns. Would you consider talking to these kids? And if we could work something out, would you mentor them a bit? And you might say, hopefully, yes. Or you might say, well, let's play around with this proposal a little bit.
Let's find somebody more suited to that task.
But that's the kind of thing that we're really looking for, is how do we embed kids in experiences in the community that allow them to really learn real-world competencies that will support them in a world that's changing rapidly, homes, communities, and workforce. And that's where Rick really comes in, because he's been working closely with us on the ideas of how do we really support up kids as entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial thinking before they even exit out of high school. So I'm going to kind of kick it over to Rick, because I think he can put some of this out. Rick Kulo, that is.
11:14 here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. It's Dr. Pam Moran, Albemarle County School Superintendent, as we talk about all kinds of things happening in the county. And we're getting ready to talk about entrepreneurship and different ways to make things happen in the schools with Rick Kulo, advisor at the UVA iLab, senior entrepreneur at the Darden-Batten Innovation Laboratory. I'll get that right in some point in the life, even if it's after this radio show is over.
Well, as Pam just mentioned, two students from Albemarle High School and also two students from STAB are going through the iLab Accelerator program right now. And so just to give you a little bit of background on the Innovation Laboratory, I'm a volunteer there, and it was started back in 2013 with the extraordinary support of W. Lyons Brown III. And the first director was Kathy Carr, and she worked with Philip Summer to start it. And over the years, right now, Jason Brewster is the director of the Summer Accelerator, a 10-week program that these students are in. And David Tuvey is the director of the iLab now. And at Batten, they're under the direction of Sean Carr and Mike Lennox. So a definition that I've heard that I like of entrepreneurship is that it is a set of life skills. It's not a business skill. And what it is a way to manifest in the real world an idea or a vision or a goal. And I think what Pam is doing, and also Chad Ratliff in the ACPS, is visionary. Because what they're doing is teaching students that are going to be facing a very rapidly changing environment. They're going to be facing environmental issues. They're going to be facing societal issues. They're going to be facing a very challenging job situation where globally 50% unemployment is predicted by some people in 2050, where the temporary part of the workforce is going to reach a third of the workforce in the United States. And to deal with an environment like that, to have a set of skills to look at change, to be able to identify what you want, and then to be able to effectuate it, which is a concept that Sarah Sarasvathi at UVA has developed, I think is a tremendously valuable life skill.
Well, when you bring in a high school student, or do you work with younger students as well?
As we've talked before, I have a 22 and a 20 and a 17-year-old. And my interest in entrepreneurship at the bottom of all this is to help them learn to deal with the real world as they can, as well as the best they can. And as part of that, I'm working with the iLab. I'm working with the Albemarle County Public School System. I was a founding member of the Charlottesville Angel Network. There's a number of developments downtown going on. Tim Miano at Space. I think Mike Signer, the new mayor, has a number of very interesting initiatives underway. And I think when you take all of that and put it together as a community, I think that we can make a tremendous difference in terms of where students will be over the next 5-10 years.
And I would say that quite frankly, Rick Moore, that we have kids all the way down to kindergarten that are engaging in some of what you might consider to be the skill sets of entrepreneurial thinking. And so, you know, you start to build that, because what you're really doing are building kids that are active learners, not passive learners, who have their own ideas about how to make things better, how to improve products, how to even create things that nobody has ever created.
Well, that's what
before.
I want to know is, what is entrepreneurial thinking? How is that different from and maybe this is the wrong way to phrase it, but Rick Kulo, what is the difference from entrepreneurial thinking than a regular class at an Albemarle County high school or elementary school?
All right. There are a number of different definitions. So what I'll do is I'll answer it from a personal perspective. And from what I've seen right now and in talking with people, there are three aspects to this. First, there's the generation of the idea. And some students need help actually developing the confidence that they can have a worthwhile idea and that their thoughts matter. And then the step after the idea is how to validate the idea, where you interact with the real world enough so that you get feedback so that you can modify it into an effective path forward. And then there's the effectuation step, where you get into the implementation. And that actually is These are all sets of skills that have a core set that are applicable to a number of different things, whether it's how to get into college, how to find the job that you want, how to learn an instrument. And then once you've identified the core path, then there are particular aspects of whatever the particular goal is that you want to achieve.
You know, and I see it play out with a kindergarten class that gets challenged by a teacher to, if you have your clothes in your bedroom and they are dirty, and you want to get them to the your parents' laundry room or to the laundromat, could you come up with a better way than having to just pick them up and carry them?
Right.
And so the kids will come up with all kinds of designs, and they actually might create some of those and try them out. And in their own sort of five-year-old way, they are really becoming entrepreneurial thinkers and then validating their ideas. And quite frankly, we've got some kids in the county that have gone to that implementation phase and have actually started to market some of the things that they've come up with. We've got kids all over the system that are doing that. But I think that entrepreneurial thinking, Rick Kulo, is something that, as you said, it's applicable beyond just, I want to be somebody who invents something and makes a lot of money or starts up my own business and does well with it here locally, that it's also about how you approach life, whether it's in your home, whether it's in your community, whether it's in your school. I've got a group of girls who are middle school girls working with high school girls that tomorrow will be in the second generation of building a bridge on the Ravana Trail, and I plan to go down there tomorrow morning. They had to cancel it on Friday, but they are entrepreneurial thinkers.
Yeah, it's an instinctive response to a situation of how can I effectuate in the real world what I would like to see happen.
I'm curious as to Dr. Pam Moran here, Albemarle County School Superintendent, Rick Kulo here, senior entrepreneur at the Darden Batten Innovation Laboratory. How is this different for what a lot of people say is just the schools do nothing but teach for testing? Because that's been an argument for the last however long now, correct? Is that kids show up and all teachers do is teach to match the test questions. This seems to be almost the opposite. You're teaching kids, you've mentioned several times, now you're teaching kids for innovation. You're teaching kids for life. This is not teaching kids for a test.
That's absolutely right. And
are you getting, what kind of feedback are you getting from the parents?
Well,
on this?
And I think that what we find is that when parents can really see their kids doing the work of problem solving, critical thinking, creating, using their creativity, collaborating with each other effectively, and being able to communicate better than ever before, they realize that our kids are being educated to be more successful in school on things that are going to matter a lot when they get out of school. Because as Rick will tell you, the world of work is changing. And for our kids to be ready for that, it's not just what they need to know, but it's also how to learn and continue to learn.
Just to pick up from there, a point that you made early in the conversation, Rick, my understanding is that the educational system for the last 100 years has created the leading economic power in the world. But it was primarily directed at creating factory workers where they could read, they could write, do arithmetic, and follow instructions. And for students like me, I was bored. There are a lot of other students that particular mode of learning is not the most effective mode of learning. And one of the things that really excites me about the ACPS is you've got Pam and Chad supporting people like Eric Bretter at Monticello, where he's taking a totally different approach to education, where the students are learning as they go. They're creating, and he's using the act of creation to impart the technical knowledge that the students are interested in. And the participation rate and the growth in those students is extraordinary. You've got Alexis Mason, the gifted resource teacher at Albemarle High School, who's been putting on workshops and doing a number of other things. Jeff Prilliman, who started the Mesa program, who's begun to introduce that into Mesa through Todd and other people like that. And then you've got Dara Bonham out at Western, who's looking very hard at ways that they can move the educational system there to apply to a larger cross-section of students to give them the skills they're going to need.
And that's a really important point, Rick Kulo, that this work, we don't really see it as just being reserved for kids that are planning to go become engineers or they want to go start their own businesses and in the tech sector, that we really see this as being important for all kids, because the workforce is such that as more jobs get automated, that what people are going to need to be able to do to be effective members of the workforce of the future is to be able to be problem solvers, to be able to people to that come in and can create up new ways of doing things inside companies. And so one of the things that we see is that not everybody's going to be an entrepreneur, but every company is going to be looking for people who think more like entrepreneurs as they join the workforce. And so the more that kids get to have those experiences starting at a very early age, the more likely it is that they will be people who will be workforce ready. But we also see it, I see it even in our own homes, that that we kind of took the vocational courses out of schools a number of years ago so that more kids could take more academic courses to pass more tests. And the reality is, when I hear about kids that don't know how to use tools in their own homes to solve problems that emerge, whether it's something around their toilet or something around their sink faucet, that bothers me. I think all of our kids need to be able to see themselves as active learners who solve problems well that are just part of home environment issues.
And again, to pick up on that, I think this is a skill that transcends any socioeconomic group. And I think that the more that you can spread this across diverse elements of society, the more you will prepare them for success in the world that they're going to be facing. It's an adult skill as well.
And people are not talking much yet about the incredible impact that automation is going to have in our workforce. I'm sure that you see some of that here in the radio station. The reality is, for people to be able to, I think, thrive in the workforce of the future, that what we've already tried to do is to pivot, to borrow from the language of the entrepreneurial world, to make a pivot and really start to focus on more than just our kids being passive academic learners that can get through the test and create the transcript to graduate, but to be much more active learners who are going to probably need to change skill sets and jobs continuously through their lifetime. Because I don't think that the tech influence in any workforce that exists today is going to stop anytime soon.
11:27 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about entrepreneurship with Pam Moran and Rick Kulo. Be right back. And back in action here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Just a few minutes left here with Rick Kulo before we move on topic. So, Rick, I want to make sure that we talk about the iLab and the students that you get from Albemarle County. How many students are you bringing over?
This year there are 24 companies in the accelerator program, and there are two companies with high school students, and there are four total high school students.
What do we do to get more? Because it seems like after the conversation that we've just had about the need for teaching, for doing this, I would think that under Dr. Moran's leadership, I mean, you don't get one of 20 superintendents across the nation being recognized for innovative leadership by Project Tomorrow. I think that comes from supporting a lot of what's been discussed. But four students would think that they're and hope that there are plans for more next year. And how does that happen? How do you get even more students involved?
Well, I think those are questions for David Tuvey and Jason Brewster.
The guy who's here.
But if I could take the liberty of speaking for them, Jason, I know, has been looking for active ways to broaden the iLab's interaction, not just with ACPS, but with Jeff Faust at Charlottesville High Schools. And I think that he's met with your teachers. I've sat in on meetings with teachers that are interested in expanding entrepreneurship. I had a chance to talk to David on Friday. He started in July, and he's looking at a number of different things that are interesting. And we're working on developing a core curriculum of entrepreneurship as a life skill. And then we're looking at broadening out from there to specific things to advance specific students, coming up with templates that Pam and others have identified or set up means for them to self-identify as being interested in this.
And I would say that Chad Ratliff, who's not here today but is one of our key point boots-on-the-ground people, serves on the governor's, has actually a task force right now on youth entrepreneurship. They're looking at both college and high school as areas that we need to develop this theme out more intensely. But Jason Brewster, he's a parent in Albemarle County Public Schools, directs some of the work at the iLab. I was over to meet with him one day to do some planning work around our school board, actually hosted their board retreat at the iLab, and Jason and some of the staff and some of the students there had a chance to talk with our board about the changes that are happening in the economy in the United States right now and worldwide. But one of the things that is really, I think, of importance in all of this is that I walked in there and there were kids from our middle schools and high schools. I wasn't expecting to walk into the iLab that day. I had no idea. We had a group of young people over there who were going through a design and startup focus with staff from the iLab. So the Darden School has been an incredible partner with us at a variety of different levels of work that they do. But the reality is, I think that anybody that's out there in the world of work understands how critical it is that we make that shift in our schools to educating kids for life and not just to pass tests or to do well in terms of transcripts in schools, Rick, as you said earlier. And so I see a lot of our kids starting to interact more with the iLab, both at-risk kids as well as some of our kids that are really, you know, sort of some of the high flyers. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why this community is a place that is a leader in the United States in terms of thinking about how do we educate kids well for their future. And I think it starts with the relationships we have, whether it's with the university, with Piedmont Virginia Community College, or with our business community, such as Rick represents.
Well, and if I can put my parent hat on for a second, I think the more that parents understand what this direction and understand why it's so important and can provide support to the teachers that are moving in this direction, I think that can provide a really valuable service to moving this forward, to moving entrepreneurship as a life skill or a set of life skills forward in Charlottesville.
All right, last question, because we need to move on and make sure that the Tierneys can come in. We're going to talk about the bond referendum for Mr. Kulo. And Rick, I'm going to ask you in front of everybody, will you come back on later on in the year to talk more about this topic in depth?
If people are interested, I would.
I'm interested, and that means that I can cover the show for an hour and promote it for an hour, and we can talk about it for an hour. And I don't mean that it doesn't matter for everybody else. It means that I typically consider myself Joe Schmo, and other people want to talk about it. So tell me, what are the two people, the two students who are involved, what are they doing now?
The ACPS students are Tyler and Reason. And what they're working on is an app where when people try and close, they can get immediate feedback from their friends. But they are both really accomplished designers. The way Reason got involved was through an Alexis Mason workshop 3 years ago. And he's actually been consulting with iLab companies for the last 2 years. And so it was a very natural progression for him to get together with Tyler and come up with an idea. They knew how to flesh it out and then to apply to the iLab. And it was a very effective application, and they've done a great job. The other company is really interesting because it's the two students from STAB, and they're working with seniors to develop the seniors' computer skills, particularly, I believe, at the Colonnades, because the seniors would love to be able to communicate with their families better, but they're not familiar with Facebook. Some of them really are uncomfortable around computers. And it's a way for students to teach them how to open up communication with people that they'd love to do. And it's very straightforward and very natural, and they're doing a great job.
Great example of what you might call a social entrepreneurship project.
Exactly.
That's Rick Kulo. He is a senior entrepreneur at the Darden-Batten Innovation Laboratory. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to meet you.
Rick, thank you for coming. Please tell Jane I said hello.
You bet.
And I can't wait to see that senior on stage at the end of the year. It'll be great.
So here it is, 11:35 here on the Sunday morning wake-up call. Dr. Pam Moran here with us throughout the hour, superintendent at the Albemarle County School. We'll be talking shortly about the bond referendum, but we'll get into that in about 5 to 6 minutes or so. Dr. Moran, I want to ask you, in doing my prep for the hour, I ran across a program called Mindful Teaching, Culturally Responsive Teaching Practices. Can you share that with me? Is something where four teachers, I believe,
certainly talk about that. In fact, I will tell you that Tish Jennings, Dr. Tish Jennings in the Curry School of Education at the University of Virginia, is one of the leading researchers and educators in the field of mindfulness as it applies in teaching and learning. And we've worked with her to bring some of her work into schools. And I will tell you that the basis of it is, how do kids and teachers decrease stress loads in their lives that may come from a variety of sources and increase their capability to be present for the learning work that we expect? So it's teaching teachers and kids, how do you calm yourself down if you find yourself starting to spin up a little bit? If you're feeling overwhelmed with the load of work that you've got to do, how do you bring balance to that? So it's about, you know, what are sort of some of those strategies that oftentimes people use who learn how to calm themselves down and be present? What is it that they do? Some of it's about breathing exercises. And as somebody who at one point in time was in Lamaze, I sure learned the value of breathing exercises when I was going through that. But the reality of it is that it is about, how do you become more mindful of what's going on inside you, and then work on ways to be able to stay present for the work that you have to do and to relieve some of the stressors in your lives. I had a parent recently say to me that one of our schools that's taught some mindfulness strategies through physical education, as well as in some of the classrooms, that she says, you know, my daughter is able to now get to bed at night with less stress about going to bed as a result of being able to use those strategies. So it applies in the home, it applies at school, and it seems to be something that helps. And so I just give a shout out to Tish Jennings, who's over at the Curry School, for having brought some of that work to us.
What about, this question comes to mind just because of what you said about stress at home. Amount of homework that kids have today. What's the Albemarle County School Superintendent's thought on the amount of homework in 2016, 2014, 2015?
Well, I will tell you, I don't think that there's many parents who would tell you that their kids today have less homework than maybe they had as children. I think that we've seen a real increase in the amount of homework that kids have in schools, particularly at the high school level, because we have a lot of kids that are taking classes in high school now that are equivalent to college level courses, AP classes, dual enrollment classes. And, you know, we have added to that. We also know that, you know, our parents have more active lives in terms of two parents working today than maybe when I was a kid, and my dad worked and my mom was home. So, you know, there's a lot of issues that have created concerns around homework. And our health advisory board brought to us 3 or 4 years ago some concerns about what they, and these are people that are medical professionals that typically sit on our health advisory board, concerns about the increased homework load that kids had, particularly in high schools and middle schools, but a little bit in elementary too. So we went through, over the past 2 years, Dr. Matt Hawes, our deputy superintendent for strategic planning, has gone through a process. He handles policy adjustments of working with teachers, working with kids even on our county student council and kids in our schools, working with parents, working with staff, to try to come to consensus about what would be a more, what you would consider to be a balanced approach to homework. And so I think that as our parents come back to school this year with that policy going in place, that you'll see a little bit more opportunity for parents to feel like that their kids can have a balanced family life with still some of the benefits perhaps that come from homework and the need for kids, particularly in some of those classes, to be able to do homework at home or after school. But we've tried to really come to a more balanced perspective in policy. So I'd like to think that we'll have a few less complaints about the amount of homework coming into us this year from out in the field.
What do you think? You talk about stress for the student in the classroom and how some of the work there can be carried at home. We talk about the amount of homework that the student may have. What is the biggest challenge for the teacher?
Well, I think the same challenge happens for our teachers because, you know, our teachers, you know, despite the fact that sometimes people think that teachers, you know, have this great schedule, I've watched teachers working all summer long. I've walked in on teachers in schools, professional development, teachers working with kids in summer school. Teachers don't have the reduced contract that sometimes people think they have. Teachers work hard, and they take their work home on weekends and on the evenings, and I know that from having been a teacher.
Yeah, that old joke about the 10 months thing, that's not true.
It's, you know, you've got educators in your family, so you know that. So one of the things that we think about is that if we really try to contain the homework explosion that's occurred and has kind of built over several years, probably a decade or so, and try to get a little bit more constraints built around that, that we may be giving something back to teachers too as well, which is less homework to grade. Because as I always say, if you're going to give it to the kids, you got to make sure you get it graded and back to them. And that takes time. And teachers don't always have that time built into their schedule during the contract hours they're in school. They're working on that at night too.
Dr. Pam Moran here with us today, 11:42 here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Hang tight. And here we are on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Dr. Moran giving me the heads up on our next guest joining us in the studio, Jim Tierney. Jim is a parent of, do you want to give out the young man's name?
Sure, that's okay.
Owen Tierney, a rising third grader, is that correct?
Correct.
In the Albemarle County School System. And Jim is also a member of the School Citizens Advisory Planning Committee. And all kinds of other stuff as well. That's what Dr. Moran was telling me about, all the things that you have put your foot into.
I got involved with, I guess, with planning in the county a couple of years back when we were looking at redistricting for Agner Hurt and some of the other schools in the urban ring. And that really kind of piqued my interest in terms of the problem that we've been having within, especially in the northern portion of the school district with overcrowding in the schools. Since that time, Pam's asked me to sit in on the Long Range Planning Committee, and I've been a member of that committee now for the last 2 years, and have hopefully seen not only seen the problems, but the committee itself has made some good recommendations, I think, in a way ahead over the next several years, how they can solve some of those problems.
Well, the bond referendum coming up for vote in November, it was had to be voted on. I believe the vote actually ended up taking place. It took place in early May or late April by the...
There have been a series of votes at both school board and...
I was thinking of by the Board of Supervisors.
And Board of Supervisors.
The Board of Supervisors had to vote on it to even put it on the ballot in November.
Correct.
I never really understood that. I mean, I can understand how you can't just put everything somebody talks about on the ballot for the general public to vote on. But I never really understood why people would vote against putting that on the ballot. Well, let me step back for a minute. So the bond referendum is four parts, correct? Four projects.
Yeah, four projects that are in the general grouping.
Dr. Moran or Jim, Jim Tierney, talk about the four projects that will be up for. It will be on the referendum.
Well, I can take that very quickly, and there's one that I think that's real near and dear to Jim because he's a Woodbrook parent. But the four projects are: one is for security upgrades that we've been working for several years to really create more safe, secure entrances into our schools. And so we have about finished that project, but we have four that present us a little bit more challenge. We've run out of funding from the state that was helping to support up doing security entrances into our school, security improvements. We have four schools that are left: Scottsville, Murray High School, Henley Middle School, and Baker Butler Elementary. So that's one piece of it. That's a relatively small piece. It's about $3 million. Another piece of it is that we have brought online, similarly to both Albemarle High School and Monticello, a STEM academy out at Western, our Environmental Studies Academy. And so we have two pieces to that project. One is to finish out the work we need to do to accommodate the 200-plus kids that will be in that Environmental Studies Academy in a couple of years to round out full enrollment. And then also to do a modernization of seven science labs at Western Albemarle that haven't been touched since the school was built in the 1970s. So those labs were built about the time I was a first-year teacher in a science lab in a school division not far from here. So that's the second project, is the Western Albemarle Science Lab Modernization and Environmental Studies classroom, the finish out for that. The third project we're after is modernization of all of our schools. And what we're working to do is to look at science labs in all of our schools. Our oldest school was built 81 years ago. Our youngest school, Baker Butler, opened 13 years ago. All of our schools need attention to natural lighting. They need attention to infrastructure upgrades, such as electrical outlets in schools. We also need some attention to furniture that needs to be replaced, all of which fall under capital improvements modernization. And then the last is the Woodbrook addition, and that's the one that Jim has really been watching, both in terms of his redistricting work as well as his work on long-range planning, to really try to make a deliberately important decision about how to accommodate the growth that we have in the northern feeder pattern, particularly the urban ring.
I didn't hear anything there about a fourth high school.
So we actually are looking at the issue of overcrowding in the high schools as well, and the need for potential need for a new high school, especially in the northern feeder pattern. There is a study that will be going forth that the Board of Supervisors actually found the money to go ahead and start researching the issue for the committee. Well, to look areas.
Research.
Sure. To review, where can we put an additional high school? Because there's a lot of growth within the county, but where can the county purchase land to place a new high school? Where does it make the most sense? Where is the growth within the county that it can solve some of those issues? And until that time, once we've got that study back, that should have some strong recommendations. The Long Range Planning Committee put forth some criteria, things that we would like to see coming out of this study, and that may be able to address the issue of, you know, where do we put a new high school, or maybe there are other solutions that we could look at as well.
So that is separate. The fourth high school that has been discussed is not part of the bond referendum.
Not at this point, because the bond referendum is basically taking on projects that have been in the pipeline and that respond to immediate needs that were already overdue to get them finished, and that money in CIP hasn't been there to finish those. This new high school is a potential solution for the future, but we've created, Jim, an interim solution, which is temporary, and that is we've put a little bit of a trailer court behind Albemarle High School.
Yep.
That will give us some time to be very deliberate about the decision-making process. I got to tell you, long-range planning, the folks that work with that, these are people who are dedicated to getting all the information, all the research they can get in order to be able to really come up with the best solution that they can. And so a knee-jerk reaction to the overcrowding is not one we want to be in right now.
And I think that's a great point to make, is that, as Pam pointed out, none of these projects are new projects. These are all projects that have been on the books for several years that address either modernization or overcrowding at the elementary or at the secondary levels. You know, right now, as we're looking at a new high school, again, that wouldn't address the problem that we have right now in the northern feeder pattern, the urban ring, for the overcrowding in the elementary schools. And that's really, I think, the driving force behind this referendum.
So the two differences are for, because again, I feel like a lot of, I said something earlier in the hour about I often feel like I'm just the Joe Schmo asking the questions of what the average person would ask is, oh, we always talk about that we need the fourth high school. Why isn't that included? Oh, because we're the bond referendum is for things that have we've been looking to do for a while. The fourth high school is in the future. These are things that are current and past.
It's not a question of, you know, not addressing those issues. We've been looking at these issues. It's also a question of, you know, financial realities. You know, we've come out of a recession. There hasn't been a lot of growth in terms of the economy that we can have additional assets that we could dedicate to growth within the education system. We're getting to a point now where, you know, it's a little healthier and we can start addressing some of these issues that we've been denying for some time.
I also would say that one of the things that's really important for the general public to know about the bond referendum is that Albemarle County, we're really fortunate that we're a AAA rated locality in terms of our bond rating. And that is, in a day and age where we've seen people all over the country lose that, we've had a local government and Board of Supervisors that have really helped with, along with our school board, to financially manage our way through a recession and remain that. Most AAA-rated communities in Virginia have been using bond referendum as a way of doing something that some people don't realize, is that if the citizens of Albemarle County vote to fund these projects through general obligation bonds, which you're required to have a referendum to get those, as opposed to traditional funding mechanisms, we'll actually get a better interest rate. And so it will end up costing our taxpayers less in the long run to go through a referendum versus to go through the traditional means of trying to figure out how do we get the money into the CIP and move it through more traditional ways. For, you know, the state has what we call VPSA, which is the Virginia Public School Authority, and that's what you traditionally go to get bonds, but it's actually at a higher interest rate. We're fortunate. Albemarle is one of the few in the state that actually has a AAA bond rating, and so that gets us the chance to go through a referendum and get a better rate.
But do we know why two members of the Board of Supervisors voted to not put the referendum on the ballot? It will be on the ballot because the vote was 4-2.
Right.
So, you know, I can't talk to, you know, the motivations behind.
I can ask him because I can ask one. Brad Sheffield will be on this show at the end of August.
Sure. And you know, what I would say is that it's not that there is a disagreement that there needs to be investment into, you know, our schools and the infrastructure. It's just the way we go about it right now. And as we're looking at it at the long-range planning committee level, we looked at all the available options that we had. We looked at new schools. We looked at redistricting. You know, there was a redistricting committee that met last year, and they recommended against redistricting again. Only because it's kind of playing a little bit of a shell game with the students. It's really not addressing the problem. You know, we looked at new schools. Unfortunately, you know, a new elementary school, there was some discussion about that. The staff worked very hard, and there was a couple of options that were presented. What we found is that the size of the school would not address significantly address any of the urban ring overcrowding, and it would probably just it would address any growth within the new communities on the north of Polo Grounds Road. So, you know, yeah. Again, those are great questions. I think the Board of Supervisors should be asked those questions. You know, these are projects that have been asked for in the SIP for several years. It's not a knee-jerk reaction. You know, this is an issue that we've been asking for assistance on, and we're at that point now where we need to take some way forward.
Dr. Moran, you mentioned earlier about how when I asked you what's one of the most difficult things, you mentioned sort of enlightening and getting the community involved who aren't parents of students. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the reasons you were here today. What is the community feedback? Do you have community feedback from non-parents on this issue?
Yeah, we actually, one of the things that we do is to really try to get out and, you know, and to get ahead of any of the concerns that people might have, to make sure we're hearing those. So we actually had a neighborhood meeting at Woodbrook Elementary back in the early spring, and had an opportunity to hear from people, both parents and non-parents, about what their concerns were. And, you know, and that helps us to make decisions that weigh those concerns into whether it's making a decision about how to locate an addition for a new school, how that might impact the neighborhood, what kinds of things we need to take into account. And so that was great feedback. We will continue to get that. And, of course, our board always goes through with long-range planning committee the process of making sure that we get feedback from our community on any designs that we build out, whether it's out in the country or whether it's in the urban ring or whether it's in suburban. You know, we really want to get feedback and say, is this something that will, in the best of situations, the neighborhood would see as an enhancement of their community, as well as serving the non-school members of the community as well as the school. Jim probably knows from being a Woodbrook parent, when you go over there, you may find parents of very young children who are not in school using the school grounds. You may find older adults that are using the walking trails there.
Yep.
It really truly is a neighborhood space.
It is a great community asset. Being at those meetings, or at least the one meeting we had earlier this year, there's concern just from what I would consider a lot of unknowns at this point towards the project. You know, there's discussion of a new addition that's going to be put on in Woodbrook, and residents are concerned about that, especially those in the immediate surrounding areas. I think what you'll see over the next several months is that there will be additional information meetings. There'll be opportunities to present input from the community, you know, to review those plans as well and make recommendations. And this isn't an absolute solution that's coming down saying, well, this is what the Woodbrook addition will look like if it gets passed through the bond referendum. There will be numerous touch points for the community to be able to address any concerns that they may have.
Absolutely. And I will tell you that I remember the day, you know, I've been in Albemarle long enough that I remember when Woodbrook was a much bigger school, had more trailers than it does now. And I think we've just moved another trailer behind Woodbrook to Hood. And I guess we should just say truth in advertising. We oftentimes refer to these as learning cottages, but in reality, they're trailers. And so, you know, one of the things that I remember is that back in the day before we built Baker Butler Elementary, that South Forest Lakes went to Woodbrook. And so you had a community that was fairly distant down the road that was part of the school. Some people have expressed concerns about, you know, we might lose our neighborhood school. The reality is Woodbrook is one of those schools that's always sat in a place where it's more of a community hub than it is a straight-up neighborhood school.
11:58, just a couple minutes left with our guest today, Dr. Pam Moran, superintendent of Albemarle County Schools. Jim Tierney, parent of a school kid. Owen's here. Morning, Owen. Say hi.
Hi.
And Jim's also a member of School Citizens Advisory Planning Committee. Jim, quick question. I want to know, this county is going to spend $42,000 to give out information on the bond referendum. What are the parents going to do? We're going to have fundraisers so that you can raise more money and say, vote yes on the bond referendum kind of thing?
No, I don't think that's really the
We're not going to be able to buy donuts or cookie dough or, you know.
Well, you'll be able to do all those
good
things,
smelling
of course.
Candles.
Sure. Those will always be available and probably at some of those information meetings. I'm here, and I'm not advocating one way or another for the bond referendum. But as a concerned parent, I can say that what I've seen as a parent of a Woodbrook student, my older son Jack went through Woodbrook. Owen is now in, you know, rising third grader there. You know, it is a community school. It is a great school, but it's also an old school. I mean, it was created in the 60s to address overcrowding, ironically enough, back in the 60s. You know, there is some infrastructure that needs to be updated. There will be benefits to the Woodbrook community overall, but the bigger impact is that it addresses, it is the, in the committee's recommendation, it is the number one way to address overcrowding in Agner Hurt, in Woodbrook, and in Greer Elementary Schools. And that's the reason why I'm really here to push for that.
And I would say that the Woodbrook addition does these things. First and foremost, as you've so eloquently said, Jim, it really centers that we have learners there who don't have parity and equity in the resources that we have in that facility to some of our other schools today. So we want to be able to bring it up to parity. We want to be able to address the capacity needs we have in the Northern Feeder Pattern. And I will tell you, Rick, we opened Greer Elementary with a new addition just a few years ago, and within 2 years, because we had built it half of what we had intended to, because the recession caused us to cut the size of that facility, the new addition, we opened that school, and within 2 years, we had filled it, and it is now over capacity. Yep. Agner Hurt, we believe, will likely be back full, if not a little bit over, in another year to two. Hollymead is full. Baker Butler is full. The Northern Feeder Pattern is growing. We know that we've got to look at a solution potentially down the road that could be a new elementary school. But right now, here's what Woodbrook gets for us. It allows us, if we build it in a way that, that really allows us to have a safety valve, it will allow us to address capacity issues and to be able to keep those under control for several years to come. It will also give us potentially some added preschool capacity in the northern end of the county, which we desperately need. And then third, I think one of the most important things is that it will also allow us to keep our operational expenses down. If we built a new school, we would add over $1 million in additional operational expenses every year. Building an addition at Woodbrook allows us to add just a few $100,000 in additional expenses to the budget. So we see this as a fiscally good decision for the county, but also one that addresses some critical issues that we have.
You can get the podcast for this show from start to finish, SevillePodcast.com. You want more about the numbers on the bond referendum, SevillePodcast.com, Wake Up Call, the show we did back in April. Bond referendum will be on the ballot in November, and you can ask Brad Sheffield questions about his vote on the bond referendum when he's on the show August 28th. Thanks to our guest today, Superintendent Dr. Pam Moran. Thank you.
Rick, always love being here with you anytime. Just give us a call or let Phil know, and we'll have anybody that can help you get any information about anything that's going on in our schools.
And thank you very much.
I want to just thank Rick Culo and also Jim Tierney and Owen for being here with us today. And can I get a picture of these guys with you before we leave?
Of course.
Thank you.
But next up on WPVC, the Hispanic music. Everybody out. Enjoy your Sunday.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.